We're glad for you to be here tonight to join with us in another study of God's Word. And as I announced last Sunday night, in connection with our study of the husband, what the Bible says about the husband, tonight I would like to study with you what the Bible says about the wife. One of the great challenges that a wife has is the difficulty she has in balancing her various roles and responsibilities. Even at best, it is hard to achieve this balance. And if a woman has a very selfish, uncaring, dictatorial husband, then the problems in her life are multiplied enormously. And preaching this lesson, I want to have a kind of a focus or a viewpoint. What shall that viewpoint be? Am I going to just speak about wives in general tonight to husbands so they can understand their wives? Or am I going to speak to wives and let their husbands listen in? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to speak to wives and let their husbands listen in. That's the viewpoint I tried to have last Sunday night with the husbands. I spoke to the husbands and let the wife listen in. So tonight I want to talk to the wives and let the husband listen in. Now what is to be your role? What is to be your role, particularly in the marriage relationship? It is a subordinate role. God has already filled the role of the leader in the family. That role is held by the husband. But the role that you have, the role of the woman, is indispensable and exceedingly important. I would like to begin our lesson tonight by reading Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31. We're going to use that chapter and that passage to a great extent in our study tonight. So let's turn Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31, and remember that we have suggested that we pair this chapter with Job 31 for the men. I think Job 31 is an excellent chapter for men to take as a kind of a model of what they should be. And that, of course, is a chapter in which Job sets forth himself as a model for what a man ought to be. So here in Proverbs 31, we have a chapter setting forth what the woman ought to be. A worthy woman, who can find? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband trusteth in her, and he shall have no lack of gain. She doeth him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She bringeth her bread from afar. She ariseth also while it is yet night and giveth food to her household and their task to her maidens. She considereth the field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and maketh strong her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh for herself carpets of tapestry. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh linen, She maketh linen garments and selleth them, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laugheth at the time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and the law of kindness is on her tongue. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her, saying, Many daughters have done worthily, but thou excellest them all. Grace is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. That's a marvelous passage. And I believe that every woman that lives ought to read that. And don't view the passage as saying, oh, I can never be a woman like that. To a great extent, we could say that with any of the challenges that the Bible holds up before us. Can you live up to the Sermon on the Mount? Who can say, I believe I can do it? Well, we would all say, I can't live up to that. Someone has said that if the goal does not exceed the grasp, then what is heaven for? Our goals must be out there before us to challenge us to reach out. What man can say, oh, I measure up perfectly to Job 31? Well, no woman could say, oh, I measure up perfectly here. But as a guide, I want to encourage every woman to take Proverbs 31 and see the principles that are set forth in it. And let it be your guide as you structure your life and as you do the things that you can do. And I want to make this, here are some things that you can do. You know, in our day, women are disparaged from the feminist standpoint and many times from other standpoints as well. The proper value is not placed upon what they do. And you sometimes get the feeling really bad about yourself. You feel like you're not making an adequate contribution unless you do this or that or the other. And what we're going to see in the lesson tonight, that in the role God has appointed you, you have a tremendous lot of good that you can do. A tremendous influence that you can have. So, to a great extent, we're going to use the wording of the psalm, of this proverb. Let's start out. You can provide for your maidens, your children, your husband. Look at these verses that I have highlighted here. 31:15. She riseth also while it is yet night. That means early in the morning. She riseth while it is yet night and giveth food to her household and their task, meaning the jobs to be done that day for those that are helping. You might say, well, I don't have any servants. Well, don't get hung up on that. That's not the point. The point is that here is a woman who realizes that she has things to do this day, and she gets up with plans to get them done. And so she gets up planning that, she knowing that she can provide for her maidens, her children. Look in verse 21. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She's prepared. She's worked and is prepared. She maketh for herself carpets or cushions of tapestry. In other words, the house looks nicer because of what she has done. Many a time I have marveled at a house that a bachelor lives in or apartments that boys live in. And then a woman comes in. What a difference it makes. What a difference it makes. Not just in how much cleaner the house may be, but how much prettier it is. How much more of a home. Verse 27, she looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness. Paul says that women are to be workers at home in Titus 2 and verse 5. In other words, the home is the chief domain of the woman. The home is the chief domain of the woman. Now, whereas the expression workers at home in Titus 2:5 does not mean that the wife cannot leave the house, that she's confined there. It doesn't mean that. Neither can she fulfill her responsibilities that God has given her without the home being the center and main emphasis of her operations. We will see the point as we go along that God is not going to judge you as a wife and mother on the basis of how many legal briefs you prepared or how many bridges you built or how many airplanes you flew or whatever like that. God is going to judge you in connection with the primary responsibility that He has given you as a woman. So, a wife cannot fill her responsibilities without the home being the center and main emphasis of her operations. We may put it like this. If there is no food in the pantry and no clothes in the closet, it's ultimately the husband's fault for not providing those things, not providing the money that is necessary to buy those things. But, on the other hand, if there is no food on the table at meals, no house cleaned, no clothes kept up, it is primarily the wife's fault. That is her domain. That is the chief area of her responsibility. Paul did not have in mind that the woman's secret weapon in being a keeper at home is Domino's Pizza and McDonald's. That is not the idea. It is your responsibility to use your husband's money wisely, to use it wisely and and to help him use it wisely. Cook meals. See after household business. Now, today we sometimes talk about, well, there isn't a family circle. Well, are there meals where the family gathers around the table? Is there a time for that? Is there a meal there? Those things don't happen by accident. Years and years ago, well, not years and years, let's just say years. Years ago, we were working with a couple, both of them infantile, both of them children that should have long since been grown up, but they never had. And he was, if anything, a bigger baby than she was. But she did not have a clue what being a wife was all about. And as she talked about the situation, she happened to be talking to Sandra this time, but Sandra reported it to me. She said, well, I provided him a hot meal. Now, I thought it was interesting. I provided hot meals. And then she went on to explain what it was. She had gone to the store and bought a box of frozen fish sticks. She had brought them home and put them on a pan and stuck them in the oven. And that was the hot meal. Or it would have been if he had been there at that time to eat them. But when he got in, they weren't hot anymore. That was her effort at a hot meal. There wasn't a family circle. There wasn't a home there. There wasn't anyone who was making the home the main emphasis of their work and so on. So this is the wife's responsibility, seeing about the home. A wife can assist in bringing in money, but that's primarily the husband's job. He needs to view it that way. He needs to view it that way. Now, I know emergencies can arise. I know sickness can arise. Things like that can arise. But every man needs to take it upon himself that I have the primary responsibility for providing for my family. The wife can help, but that's primarily the husband's job. Likewise, the husband can assist in cooking and cleaning and caring for the baby, but those things are primarily the wife's job. I do not mean by this means that the husband can sit in his recliner and the wife becomes his body servant. I think that there's a whole lot more wrong with that attitude than just some misunderstandings about this idea. What did you marry your wife for, men? You know, we must not ever think of our wife as being our body servants. And our children must not be our body servants either. But nevertheless, though the husband can assist in those things, and I think good, considerate husbands will do so, nevertheless, these are the things that are centered around the home, and they are primarily the work of the wife. Being a keeper or a worker at home does not mean spending all one's time on the road between the mall and Walmart. And when I'm saying this, I'm not trying to be smart at it. And I'm not saying, that's what you women do. But I am saying if it is what you do, then you understand that that is not what being a keeper at home is about. That is not what is meant when it talks about that the home is the center of your work. It is your domain. That's not the idea. So that's one thing that a woman can do. She can guide her household. She can give the task to her maidens and see about the things of the home. Now, in chapter 31 of Proverbs, let's look at these verses with a little different emphasis. 13 through 15. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She bringeth her bread from afar. She ariseth also while it is yet night and giveth food to her household and their tasks to her maidens. Verse 17. She girdeth her loins with strength and maketh strong her arms. Now that verse, what it really is saying is that here is a woman, here in Proverbs 31, is a woman who feels good about herself. She feels good about who she is. She feels good about what she does. She knows what she does, and she knows that what she does is of great value, and she feels good about it. And so she girds her loins with strength. She makes strong her arms. Verse 18, she perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Verse 19, she layeth her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. And the first part of verse 27, she looketh well to the ways of her household. So she sees that within her realm, her activities are greatly profitable. And armed with this knowledge, she sets out to accomplish what she can. In 1 Timothy 5:14, Paul states that the younger women should marry, bear children, rule the household, meaning that she is in charge of the operation of the household. And that's the point that we were also making just a moment before. So I think that the thing that I really want to emphasize in this part of the study is that this woman sees that within her realm, her activities are greatly profitable, and she feels good about what she does. Now, I'll tell you a clue. One of the things that helps her to feel good about what she does is that she has a husband that says, "Many daughters have done worthily, but you excel them all." Here is a man who praises his wife because he knows how much he owes to her. And that helps her to feel good about herself. And armed with this knowledge, she sets out to accomplish what she can. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing to see. All right, here is another important point, women, about what you can do. You can bring honor to your husband. You can do him good and not evil. Now, in the context of our day, you know, women would say, "Well, what would I want to bring him honor for?" Well, it depends on whether you want to. Depends on whether you love him, whether you would like him to be considered well by other people. That kind of puts a different light on it, doesn't it? You have to remember, when you're studying things in the Bible, you've got a mutual thing going. You've got a thing of love going. It's not a competition. It's not a contest. And just as the man wants to make his wife all she can be, the wife wants to make her husband be all he can be. Part of the way she does this is by the reputation she builds for herself. A man who is married to an honorable wife is at least regarded as a man of discretion, that he had enough sense to marry a good woman. But there's a lot more to it than this. She brings stability to his life. In verses 11 and 12, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he shall have no lack of gain. She doeth him good and not evil all the days of her life. It's sort of like in a battle of life. You have somebody at your back, and they don't have to worry about what's happening on this side because I'm handling that. And I don't have to worry about what's going on back there at my back because she's handling that. You trust each other. And so that's part of the stability that a wife can bring to the life. A man would do very well to profit from the advice of a wise woman. There is a little story that I want to tell you here. A number of years ago, when I had not been preaching very long. We got very close to a family, and the wife was killed in a car wreck. That was one of the early great tragedies of our lives. So we were trying to help the man, kind of put things together. And we hadn't even buried her yet, even during those first few days when the funeral was taking place. We were trying to do all we could to help him bear with his loss. She had towering ability. She just had such ability. And she was a very wise woman and a very good woman. The husband, he really stood in her shadow in a way. He didn't have her ability. He was a good man. I think he was as good as she was, but people didn't realize that. So he didn't have the ability. He didn't have the wisdom himself. And he had three children to raise. And they were all fairly young. So I remember at the funeral, he took control. I've never seen anything like it. He had the funeral director after the ceremony, the sermon and all was over. He had the funeral director to have everyone to leave. And he stayed behind and he asked me to stay behind also. And so everybody was out. Everyone had gone out except for him and me. And so I got to hear what he did, what he said. And what he did, he just talked to her. And it was not some kind of a psychological aberration or something like that. That wasn't the kind of thing it was. He knew she was dead. But he spoke to her and he said, "You are my teacher." Now imagine that. Imagine a man being able to profit from the wisdom of his wife, to know that she was wise, to know that he needed her help. And I've never forgotten that. And that man went on and he reared those children. He turned out to be a far greater character than people thought. But one of the things that enabled him to do that was he had a wise wife and he knew it. And he was willing to take her help. And although she was gone, in a way she lived. Because the principles that he had learned from her were the principles that he employed and used consistently and conscientiously the rest of the time that those children were growing up. And so he told her, "You're my teacher, and I'm going to try my best to do the things that I've learned from you." I was really impressed with that. Deeply, deeply impressed. So that's one thing that you can do, wives. You can bring honor to your husbands by being there for him, giving him the advice that he needs from time to time. And although sometimes it's not easy for us men to listen to advice, we need to. And I think about that story. As we said to the husbands, I say now to the wife, you can also help your husband to be a faithful man by not making the sexual relationship a matter of reward or punishment, but a matter of love, just as he should do with you. Here's something else that you can do. Something that you need to do. You need to teach your baby from a fetus to be a Timothy. Now, I've deliberately chosen the word fetus there because in English it is one of the youngest words you could use for a baby. We could say embryo. But in 2 Timothy, chapter 3 and verse 15, Paul writes Timothy and says, "And that from a babe," I don't know what the word is in your translation, but that word babe is from a Greek word that is the youngest word of all for a child. And Paul, being the master of Greek language and words and being guided by the Spirit, he deliberately chose the word in the Greek language that referred to a babe at the very youngest age of all. And what that stresses is that you must begin the task as early as possible, training your child, your children. Begin as early as possible training them to be a Timothy. The faith of Timothy had been transmitted from generation to generation. Back in 2 Timothy 1 verse 5, Paul says, "Having been reminded of the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice." Now that means that Paul either knew Lois and Eunice, or he had heard enough about Lois, the grandmother, that he knew that this was a fact. It wouldn't be unthinkable that he had met Lois, and that he, of course, knew Eunice. And he said, "The faith that is in you dwelt first in your grandmother, and then in your mother." This had happened through teaching and example. It didn't happen by accident. Eunice was married to a Greek, not a fellow Jew. It would not have been easy for her to do what she did. But she succeeded in creating in Timothy a tremendous and profound faith. A faith that would move him to go with Paul the Apostle. Though he had either seen or knew of Paul's being beaten, stoned to death, or almost to death, in Lystra. And in Eunice, it was a faith strong enough that when the request was made, she was willing for her son to go with Paul and to suffer the dangers that they would face. In 1 Timothy 2:15, Paul makes the point of the woman, "She shall be saved through her childbearing." Now this does not mean that she shall be saved through the mere physical act of bearing a child. If that were the case, Athaliah would be all right. Jezebel would have been all right. So you can see immediately that it's not the physical act of childbearing that is the thing here. Childbearing, rather, denotes the realm of her primary activity. Now that doesn't mean that if you are a wife unable to have children, that somehow you just can't be what God would want you to be. No, not at all. God, you can be everything God wants you to be, faithful to Him and good and kind and do so many things. But the fact is that the directions given in the Scriptures are for the rule, the majority. And in the majority of cases, in the course of marriage, children come along and the wife is to function as the mother of these children. The husband bears the overall responsibility to nurture the children. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Everything is under his headship, but he has to have some really big time help. And in this area, the wife, the mother, is indispensable. Or if not indispensable, as in the case of the man I mentioned a moment ago, you have to be extraordinary to overcome the problems that you face in doing it alone. The mother needs to realize that she is the one who will spend the most hours with the children. And she will need to use much of her time with the children to do the teaching that I'm talking about. We men need to be sure that we take the time to teach as well. And you don't need a lot if you'll use what you have wisely. I think I've mentioned to you before that when our children were little and we started taking them to kindergarten, on the way to kindergarten, I would begin in September telling my children the Bible story. And through the school year, every morning, I would tell them a little more of the Bible story. And every year, we would go through the entire Bible story on the way to school every morning. And we did that until they didn't want to be seen with Daddy driving to school. You know how that gets. And so, there were quite a few years there that that's what we did. And they learned. Here's something else that you can do. You can be a Dorcas. Somebody says, well, why would I want to be a Dorcas? I think that most everybody would like to be a Dorcas in some ways. In Acts chapter 9 and verse 39, Peter arose and went with them, and when he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber, and all the widows stood by him weeping and showing the coats and garments which Dorcas made while she was with them. And you read this whole story about Dorcas. It soon becomes obvious in the story that Dorcas was a most esteemed and most loved woman. She was the kind of woman who left an awfully big hole when she passed away. And her passing was grieved by many of the people. She was a woman full of good works. The widow stood weeping and showing the coats and garments that she had made for them. And they wouldn't have shown them by going over here to a pile and saying, look at this one. No, they would have said, look at this coat that she made. No, they were wearing the things that she had made for them. Now, here's the thing. We would all like to have the love and esteem of others as Dorcas did. But such things have to be earned. Have you ever marveled? Haven't you ever marveled at funerals? Like sometimes you'll have a funeral of somebody that's supposed to be pretty important, and there's a pretty good turnout. But everybody knows that the reason why most of those people are there is duty. It's appropriate. But then haven't you known situations? I've known situations even since we've been here at Eastside where somebody died that was not famous. They were not wealthy. They had done nothing great the way the world spoke of it. And yet the building, the chapel, wherever would be overflowing. Well, why? Why would so many people be there for someone that the world would regard as a nobody? Because they had the love and the esteem of those people. And I'll tell you what, that's going to matter more and more when you start evaluating your life and say, what have I lived for? What have I accomplished? And that love and that esteem of others is going to mean more to you as the years go by than anything else. That and the knowledge of heaven, which of course is uppermost in everything. Now I'm going to skip a few points here and I'm going to come on to this because there are some important points I want to make to you. So we're going to skip on down here now to this one. You can be a Lydia worshiping as a Jew in a Roman colony. I don't know what the future may hold and I don't know where you may move, but I want to make a point here in connection with Lydia. Lydia was a woman who worshiped God either as a Jew or a Jewish proselyte. I'm not sure which. She was a wealthy woman, but she did not allow her circumstances to affect her need for God. It was not convenient, not flattering, for her to have to worship by the river. You know, it would have been more in keeping with her status and with her wealth to worship in a well-built synagogue or a well-built building of some kind or other. But that was not what guided Lydia. She worshiped God wherever she had to worship God. Ladies, you have a responsibility to worship God wherever you are and whatever your circumstances. And I want to use here the example of Sister Fletcher. She's another one of my long gone past that I wanted to tell you about. Sister Fletcher and her husband moved with about 12 children to South Alabama many, many, many years ago. And when I came on the scene, the children were long since grown. And she was the sweetest old lady. I enjoyed visiting with her because she could cook deer meat like you would not believe. She could cook almost anything else like you wouldn't believe. And she always cooked a big table full and would call us when nobody showed up. And it was interesting that a lot of times nobody showed up, so Sandra and I would beat a path down there. We loved Sister Fletcher. But she would tell me, I don't know the time, she said, Brother Waldron, we were down here for 20 years or 30 years. I forget how many, but it was a long time. And there weren't a church anywhere. So what? So she didn't go, and her husband didn't go, and her 12 children did not go. I wonder if something has occurred to you. If you take her 12 children, plus her and her husband, that would be 14, would it not? I have worshiped in regular congregations that weren't any bigger than that. What could she have done? She and her husband could have conducted services and worshiped God right there in the middle of nowhere, and they could have saved their children. They could have saved themselves. Now, if you had to take a guess at it, what would you guess about her children? Well, there were two that did attend services, some. One of them would occasionally be reproved by the Baptist foreman on the carpenter job he was working on because of his cussing. The Baptist foreman would get on to this man who was supposed to be a Christian because of his cussing and other stuff that he did. He was just a scoundrel. And his brother, the other one that did attend, he was a good man in many ways. But essentially, she lost every one of them. So, mothers, wives, you have a responsibility to worship God wherever you go, whatever your circumstances. Don't let your family be lost to the Lord. Okay, now then, let's notice this point. Here's what you can do. You can spend your time preparing yourself to be judged by God. You will not be judged according to how much data you entered, or how many houses you sold, or how many bridges you built. You will be judged in connection with the things you did in your role as a wife, as a woman, a wife, and a mother. I want to close the lesson tonight with this last point that I hope will be meaningful to you. Hope you will appreciate it. When you reach that point in life where you begin to want to ascertain what you've done with your life, there is nothing that can equal having the gratitude and praise of a husband, children, and friends. That esteem that we were talking about a while ago. Let me turn back here to Proverbs 31. A worthy woman who can find, for her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband trusteth in her, and he shall have no lack of gain. She doeth him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now skip over to the end of the chapter. Verse 29, the last part of, or verse 28 rather. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her, saying, many daughters have done worthily, but thou excellest them all. Now that would be sweet music to the ears of a wife. But it takes two things for that to happen. It takes a wife who is what she ought to be, and it takes a husband who realizes what he has. So notice that. It takes a wife who is what she should be, and it takes a husband who realizes what he's got and appreciates it. A woman such as we have described indeed has a price far above rubies. I like to hear a lesson Wes Brown has on this general topic. And one thing he does as he goes through it, he'll talk about what a wife does. And then he'll say, how much do you think that's worth? That worth minimum wage? You know, talking about all these wonderful things that the wife and the mother does. How much is that worth? That worth minimum wage? And he kind of ups the price as he goes through. Oh, it's indeed far above rubies. You know, you get to thinking about it, it begins to be like, how much would you give for one of your young'uns? And you would say, well, I wouldn't sell them for anything. Well, that's the point. Far above rubies. See, that's the point. What's the price of your child? Far above rubies. Why? Because you love the child. You value and prize the child. And that's the point being made about the wife. Her children rise up to call her blessed, and her husband recognizes her value and praises her. So, ladies, these are the things that you can do. Wives, mothers, these are the things that you can do. When God made woman, He did a great job. She is the greatest earthly gift that God has ever given to men. You women need to think of yourselves in that way. And we men need to understand that also. But you don't have anything to be ashamed of. You don't have anything to apologize for. You have a great calling in life. There may be someone here tonight who is not a child of God. As I said last Sunday night, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you are yet a father or a mother or a wife or husband, whatever, the greatest thing and the most important thing and the first and fundamental thing that you need to do is to get yourself right with God. You may be the finest woman in the world in many ways. You may be the finest wife in many ways, the finest mother in many ways. But if you are not a Christian, then to a great extent, all of that will be in vain because you are still going to wind up lost. And the fact is that if you do not set the example yourself of being a Christian before your husband and before your children, then there is the greatest likelihood that your children will not be Christians. They will be lost, and they will share your faith. You know, we sometimes, like this morning, I was talking about the horrors of heaven, the horrors of hell. Have you ever thought about how horrible it would be for you as a mother or a father to be in hell and to have your children who are in hell with you to come up to you and what would they say? Now, I'm talking about that kind of thing tonight. If you're not a Christian, then what are you doing to avoid that fate? Tell me why that's not going to happen to you. What are you going to do about that? I hope that will not happen to you, because I hope that tonight you will become a Christian and will be faithful before God all of your life. And then rear those children to be faithful. Live before that husband in a way as to help and encourage him to be faithful, so that all of you and those you love can make it to heaven. If you're subject to the invitation of Jesus, we hope you will come as we stand and sing.